I think if you're a true auteur or a true visionary, you know how to communicate your vision so well that you'll get something better than you ever thought of. But it's, but that becomes from, that comes from the way that you guided the project.
Hello, and welcome to Why Not Both, the podcast all about how to lead your best, creative, multi-passionate, multifaceted life. Over the last few years, I've gotten the opportunity to interview so many wonderful creative souls, and I got the benefits from that, but realized that maybe there were some people who hadn't heard some of these episodes. So I wanted to share them again, and that brings us to the here and now. This season is called Full Circle, where we are revisiting a bunch of the interviews I did. This particular interview is with the musician Zola Jesus, and in sharing this interview, I went back through the transcripts and was struck just by the scope of the conversation we had. Like, there were so many moments that over the time that it's been since we chatted, I've been reflecting on, why do I create art? One of the things that she brought up was intrinsic motivation in a way versus extrinsic. So are we making something because it's bubbling up from inside of us? Or are we making something because there's outside pressure to do so? And as an artist, I personally am always debating that question. We also chatted about how location informs how you're feeling, about how other people's perceptions are informing what you end up creating, and quite frankly, how being a creative in the current landscape is chaotic and strange and wonderful at best. I hope that you enjoy this interview and take the time to really let some of her humor and wisdom sink in.
So now that we've gotten the fun and excitement of troubleshooting Zoom out of the way, like, how are you? Like, just in general.
Oh, I'm good. Yeah. I forgot this was an interview. I thought we were just hanging. I was like, oh, hey, how are you? How are you doing? No, I'm good. I'm good. Like, why did you call? Oh, okay. Hi. No, I'm good. Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah, I'm good.
It's funny. I used to start the pod and like, I don't even have like official interview questions because that's what a normal interviewer would do. But I kind of accidentally jumped myself into doing a podcast prior to like the pandemic and everything. And then people actually liked it. So I kept going and you'd think I would have formulated interview questions by now, but like you'd be wrong.
it's better to just see where it can go. You know, it's more fun that way.
Exactly. Like, it was funny that you were like, oh, like, I thought we were just chatting. I was like, oh no, that's literally the conceit of the podcast.
It's great. Then we're already off to a good start. So that's perfect.
Exactly. It was funny. I remember I used to start asking people like, what was a better question than asking, what do you do? Or like, how are you? Cause those are usually what people open with. And I find myself even still like returning to those social scripts, even though I feel like they don't make any sense anymore.
Yeah, what do you do? Well, I mean, we're all just surviving. So it's kind of it's an insulting question to ask most people these days. What do you do? I don't know. I'm barely hanging on.
I was going to say, like, we are hanging on by a thread here. Like, yeah. That's what we're doing. there's that gif from, the show with Alana and Abby that I'm blanking on the name of.
Broad City?
Yes.
Yeah.
How am I doing?
Yeah. How am I doing?
Yes. I did get to watch your music video last night that you just released though, and it made me so happy that you musically went so many different places with it, even though everyone's like, it's a pop song, and I was like, I love that that's what you did with pop. It made me exuberant and delighted.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I wanted to try. Also, the video was like my version of a pop video, like a 90s pop video. It was fun to try to figure out how to fit myself into this very unlikely format that I don't necessarily belong in, but like to play with.
I loved it. Like, the symbols, at least that I saw in it, there's like the mirrors and the masks and the diaphanous clothing. And I was like, which videos were you like specifically thinking of, or was it just kind of like the vibe of the 90s?
Well, I definitely was into like the, I've been watching on my like whatever TV package I have, like it comes with MTV Classic, which is a classic MTV experience where they just play music videos, but it's mostly from like the TRL days, which, you know, I love. I grew up with TRL. So, you know, I was watching a lot of Backstreet Boys, Christina, Britney, like all the greats. And I just love like, you know, the choreographed dances and everything's very reflective and symbolic in some ways. And like, so yeah, but definitely like that, the 90s pop stuff.
I love that. That might explain why it like resonated so much with me, aside from the fact that you're wonderful. Like that was definitely like my... my intake of art at a very pivotal
point in my life.
Serious people in diaphanous clothing doing interpretive dance is seared into my psyche. I guess it's interesting thinking about like even like filming things like that and embodying things like that. What sprung to mind just now is like, what was it like embodying that after we've had a period of being like not seen?
Oh, that's a very good question, because I was so uncomfortable. And I'd also just come, so like, not only the pandemic where I've been in the woods for 2 years, like totally a total goblin style, like mirrors, like, I don't know them, like I don't know what I look like anymore, I don't know anything about anything, you know. And then on top of it, I like was right before filming that video, I was in like a palliative care role, caregiving a relative.
Oh my God.
In the late stages of their life. And so my entire world was prioritizing the care of this other, giving care to this other person, to the point where like I just felt like completely disembodied, completely deep, like depersonalized in a way. Like I just was so not used to conceiving of myself or of as being like perceived, you know what I mean, or being seen in that way.
Yeah.
That like I went from there and flew directly to shoot the video, and it was like extremely hard for me to switch gears, because I was so not, I'm not used to being observed anymore or like seen or the center of attention. Yeah. So then I think like that, like there's a little bit of awkwardness in the video that's very hard for anyone to see, I think, but like I see it, because I was like, whoa, I'm not used to this anymore. And you know, it's like, what is this strange world that I've been thrusted back into after years of playing a completely different role, you know? It was a trip. Yeah.
Wow. That is, I mean, what a gift, by the way, to give caregiving like that, because that is extremely intense. Like, I think that people who haven't been through that or don't know someone who's been through that, like giving palliative care to someone is like, one, I was like, what a wonderful thing to do for someone. But also like, you're essentially kind of abdicating your own self in a way temporarily.
Totally. Because it's a full-time thing. And, you know, there's no time for oneself in such, you know, especially in those last weeks when it's so ephemeral and you're just caught up in this moment of just trying to provide this person as much comfort and care as humanly possible as they, you know, pass on to the next stage of life or whatever. And so it was very weird then to jump on a plane and get in front of a camera and have to be kind of like, I don't want to say vain, but just have to be aware of myself from like a very like aesthetic point of view that I was just so not used to.
Yeah. Cause like in a way it's interesting to contrast with like sharing an artistic expression, because both are valuable, but one, you have to almost like, what came to mind, I was just like, it's not like channel self-importance necessarily, but it's like, you have to summon something that you're going to share with someone else. And if you're like sharing of your interpersonal space with someone else in like the palliative care way, that's very different than summoning the part of yourself that's like, yes, I'm going to channel all these artistic messages that are going to reach other people. Like it's intended for an audience, but it's like, you have to summon so much of yourself to then share with others, that's a very, very, very sharp contrast.
Yeah, very. Yeah. Yeah, it's intense. But both, you know, I love to live in extremes. And so whatever it gets thrown at me, I'm like, okay, well, it's interesting to go from one extreme to the other in that sort of like experience. But yeah, very intense time.
Wow. Wow. And yeah, especially like you said about like, I deeply relate to like the goblin in the woods, that the only time I've really perceived myself that much during this has been on Zoom. And that's like watching myself watch myself. Like it's a very,
oh, I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't love it. Though weirdly,
it's so unnatural. And you know, like there's something about also like, for instance, I don't know, spoiler alert, there's no video for people listening to this. We are not zooming with cameras on. And that's mostly because my internet is horrible in the woods, but also because like, if I'm recording something that's going to be audio, then like watching someone talk and having to read their cues and respond with visual cues totally negates the power of like the verbal message. But then also I feel like Zoom and all these like and FaceTiming and all this is so deranged because you're having to watch yourself talk to somebody, which you never ever do in real life. I'm never standing in front of a mirror as I'm having a conversation with somebody. Like it's totally deranged. And like, I don't accept it because the entire time I'm looking at myself talking to someone and like overanalyzing how I'm like responding through body language and stuff. And
yes.
It's horrible. It's horrible. It's horrible. It needs to stop. Then we need to turn the cameras off.
That I 110% agree. And it's really funny because like I ask people before I interview them, like if they want to be on camera. And I always say like, if you do not want to be on camera, that is like 110% fine. Because I basically followed my own sword for this because I hate self-monitoring myself like on camera in that way, because no one would ever do that. No one would ever be speaking to someone else while staring at themselves in a mirror. And so it's like, if someone wants to be on camera, I will, because then it's like, it's fascinating to me that people like to watch people's conversations, but it used to be that they were filmed, for instance, on a camera that we weren't looking at, which like,
exactly,
sometimes, you know, you can magically think your way into forgetting the camera's there, but like, mm-hmm. if it's right in front of you, you can't. And so you find yourself like, I don't know if you find this, but like if I'm watching myself on FaceTime or on Zoom, I almost express too much. Like I find myself wanting to like make sure that my facial expression is congruous with what I'm saying, but then I end up like accidentally like over facial expressing. And then I'm like, oh my God, is my face really that loud? So then I'm like, no, Pam, like express less with your face. And then I'm just like, now I just look alarmed.
You know how much energy that takes, like doing an audio interview, you know, just so I can just, you know, we're just talking through words. It's all good. We don't need to deal with all the visual stuff. But like when you enter this whole arena of like, now you're watching yourself talk, like there's so much energy that's being expended that is not actually being communicated through like what's actually going to be shown later, which is like, you know, in this case, the podcast.
Yes.
But I'm just like, damn, it's not worth it. It's not worth it to me. I got too much to do. I'm too tired. I can't be wasting energy looking at myself and admonishing my, you know, my features and the way that I'm like responding to people. And yeah.
Yes, it is absolutely the weirdest. But I personally, I love it when people are like, hey, I want to do phone, or like, oh, I don't really feel like having my camera on today. I'm always like, oh, thank God.
Like, yeah, right. I mean, I'm in bed right now. Let's just be real. I'm in bed.
Yes.
You don't need to see that. Okay. Like, I'm fine. I'm comfy. I'm cozy. I'm ready to talk. But like, just give me something, goddammit.
That's like where we're at. Like, that's literally like my clients are like that. I put on, I am wearing a nap dress, so I'm like bed adjacent. But I put on before interviews and before therapy sessions, I always put on a necklace, as weird as that sounds. It's like, I know that
you're getting dressed.
Yes. Wearing a necklace, that I'm like, all right, we are professional. Are we wearing a bra? Questionable. Are we eating snack? Definitely. But are we wearing a necklace?
I love it. She's dressed. She's ready to go. It's fine. You know, I'm all for it. You know, we've been trying too hard for the past couple decades, and it's just, we're done. It's good. It doesn't pay off. I'm tired.
I am very pro having conversations like from bed, from the couch. Like,
it's where I do my best work, honestly. Like, if I could do everything from bed, from couch, it's really when I'm in my flow state, you know.
I'm relaxed. Oh my god, my partner has set up a whole mixing setup on his couch because he realized that for the most part when he was mixing, he'd be lying on the couch in his old studio and like listening to things that way. So he set it up in his home and he has like ergonomic pillows now, like for like under his like vibe. I'm like, this is adorable and nerdy.
It's so the way to go.
It's totally figured it out. The way to go. Like,
yeah.
He's like, where are people going to be listening to music? They're going to be like, most of the stuff he's mixing, he's like, they're going to be like watching it, you know, it's synced to like, he's doing TV mixes, like things like that. He's like, they're going to be on their couch. He's like, I want it to feel like this. So he's like mimicking the feeling. And I'm just like, oh my God, that's genius. Why have
we
been sitting up making music this whole time? We should be like,
I know, we don't need to be, you know, we're punished so hard for being alive right now. Like, we don't need to keep punishing ourselves. Like, take a win. Just, you know,
just
get in bed.
Yep. I've got my spot's my fainting couch. I need to get it recovered though, because my sometimes
love those
destroying it. But my fainting couch is my fave, and clearly my sometimes cats as well. My neighbor's cat adopted me, so we have joint custody. Hence the sometimes.
that's a good idea.
She's great. I don't know if you've experienced that, of a cat just claiming you as your own, as their own, really. Like, you can't claim them, but they claim you.
Yeah. I mean, I basically have, my cat is for the first couple of years was a roommate. You know, I consider him a roommate, you know, he comes and goes as he does what he needs to do. But I feel like, within the past year or so, I do feel like he's chosen me when no one else is around. to be, you know, to bump me from the priority.
I love that he's like, but, you'll do.
Yeah, he's like, you're fine. You'll do. I guess you can pet me, I guess. But yeah, I love him.
I love how cats do that. Where it's like, I'd never had a cat prior because I'm actually allergic to most cats. And my sometimes cat does not care. She's just like, oh, I see you're sneezy. That's fine. I'm just like, well,
that's fine. Like, that's too bad for you. Okay, anyway.
Oh, God. What's it like? I guess, like, you know, it sounds like I'm like, okay, you've got a cat, you've got the woods. What's it been like creating in those circumstances? Because like you said, I'm like, we all deserve some bedtime.
Yeah. Yeah. Creating in the woods has been great because I start to forget when I'm here long enough, I start to forget that like that the outside world exists, which I like, because then I can really just feel free. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually quite inspiring. Like, the longer I'm here, the more I feel like I don't belong to society anymore. And so I can end up like building the worlds in my head more easily. Because when I'm like in cities and stuff, I just feel so overwhelmed with culture, mm-hmm. like the hegemonic culture, that like I feel like I can't hear my own creative vision because it's like it's like competing with everything else going on. So yeah, being in isolation or being in the woods is super helpful for me.
That sounds, oh my God. I was talking with my best friend yesterday about like how to run away to the woods, essentially. she was saying that like the time that she spent, like she lived in Topanga for a while. And the time that she spent there, like we were contrasting that with like what's going on currently. Like, and she doesn't like live in the middle of the city, but it's, you know, it's the difference of like being isolated and being able to expand creatively because it's quiet and you don't have those other like you said, like the hegemonic culture and the voices from around you, or even the energies around you, that then you're able to tune into your own, but also being able to do that in a sustainable way. Cause we were talking about like how to do that, where it's like, say you're isolated in the woods, but you also are doing something else to sustain yourself, because otherwise you can't be in the woods, and then you're trapped yet again in like the Gordian knot of capitalism, where it's like, how do you do that? And I was like, oh my God, that sounds exactly like what we both were saying we were aiming for, is like how to be in a place where you can, it's quiet enough that you can hear yourself, like, you know, physically, but also energetically. But also, how do you then make that sustainable? And we're like, mm-hmm. Where do we go? Where, which woods?
I definitely think it's the future. I mean, I think it's the past, but I think it's also the future, because, well, with the internet, you can really be anywhere. And so we saw that with the pandemic, people like leaving cities in droves and, you know, going to exotic places or going into the woods and, you know, being able to work just fine. It just depends on like how much you need the city in order to thrive, in order to survive doing what you do. For me, like, I don't really need to go to, I don't need to be there necessarily. Mm-hmm. So I prioritize what like I need as an artist, like what the muse needs in order to feel healthy, and not what anything else is. And so I guess in some ways I had to deprioritize playing the games of capitalism, because can you hear that? My dog's barking.
I love that your dog's like, I have opinions.
FedEx just came and she's trying to protect the house from the evil delivery man who's gonna just drop off something that I requested to come.
She's like, I'm doing my job.
I know, she's gonna expect a treat after this, like, I did it.
I protected.
They left. They're gone now. Don't worry. They're gone.
I've scared. Oh god. Evil men. There's only treats now.
Yeah. Oh God bless her. She. Who needs an Amazon Ring when you got a German Shepherd?
Oh my God. I love German Shepherds so much. They're so sweet and so high strung. It's amazing.
She takes me on a ride every day. It's never enough for her. It's throwing rocks in the woods for her for 16 hours a day would not be enough.
Yep.
But she's also such, number one, she's such a narc, you know, she's really a stickler about the schedule. Mm-hmm. So I'm usually very flowy in my schedule, my daily rhythm, but she's not. And so she puts me on her schedule. So I've really learned how to acquiesce.
Oh.
And I respect it. I respect the hell out of her. So.
Well, know, and she sounds like, it's funny, I grew up with a Doberman. And
oh, I love those too.
Oh, they're so good. My dog Princess. My parents asked me when I was two what to name the dog, and so of course I said Princess. And same thing where it's like she had a, it's interesting thinking about like the expectations of animals, and even like your cat versus your dog, that like I found, at least with her, like dogs have expectations. And it's like, if you don't meet that expectation, they're like, why is the thing that's supposed to happen not happening?
It's so extreme.
Maybe there are dogs that don't have this temperament, but yeah, it's like, yeah. Like if you didn't like take her for walks at the time she was used to going on walks, and like, you know, feed her at the time that she was used to being fed, like things like that, like she would just like come and find you and just be confused. Like she would just be sitting there like looking at you like, qua.
that is literally what Nadia does. Like she'll have a bowl full of food, she's not eating her food, but then like, you know, she still is expecting that next scoop of food, whatever, the next dinner, when dinner time comes. And if I don't give it to her, because she has a full bowl of food, but if I don't give her that last scoop, she will not come upstairs. She will protest. She will wait. She will put up a fight until she gets that scoop of food, but she will also not eat. She will not eat the food.
Right.
She doesn't like it. It's like, killing me, woman. Killing me.
Oh my God. I'm so glad that Nadia has the same temperament that Princess. You had to put a little bit of water in her kibble to make it the right texture. Otherwise, like, she'd be like, this kibble is too crunchy. Like, she would just sit there and be like, why is this happening?
It's fair, you know, like, I get it. Like, I wouldn't want to be eating dry ass kibble every day anyway. So, but, you know, give me a break. You're a dog.
I'm like, you have consumed weird things, way weirder things than kibble.
Seriously. Seriously.
Oh my God. No, like, thinking about what you said about, you know, that we can be anywhere we want, but it also speaks to, like you said, like, the priorities that you have. And, like, it's interesting thinking about the priorities of a city versus the priorities not of a city. And it made me wonder, I was like, did you grow up, like, in a city or not in a city? Like, I guess kind of what informs some of that. I say this as someone who, like, was born and raised in LA. And so for me, it's like, it's a fascinating mental exercise to be like, what's life not in city? ?
Yeah, well, I grew up on the same land where I live now. So I grew up on like 150 acres of woods in the middle of Wisconsin, like 3 hours from a city. And it was extremely isolating and I hated it. I was so excited to leave that I graduated when I was 16. And lo and behold, I came back. Like, joke's on me. But I think it's because, like, I'm just drawn to being surrounded by trees, needing a lot of space, feeling like, for me, the woods are like a buffer, and I don't feel afraid of nature, but I feel afraid of people. Like, and so I think some people will go to the woods and be scared because they're very alone and they feel like, oh, something could happen, where I'm like, oh, I'm away from the things that could hurt me. Like, you know, right. I feel very scared of people, and because they have potential kind of to do great harm. But, right. But the woods it's pretty benign, you know, it's in some ways it's unforgiving, but everything's like, I just know what to expect, you know? And so it makes me feel safe and kind of neutralized.
That's a fascinating way to put it, because I wonder also, when I think about going to the woods, and I don't know if other people feel this way, I almost fear my own, like, either what's inside of me, or I don't know how to put it other than my own incompetence, like, that I would fail to do something correctly and result.
Right. Yeah.
But that might be because, like, I've never lived in an isolated place like that. And so it's like, I'm like, yep, my computer just restarted itself twice before even trying to start an interview. So I'm just like, yeah. I don't know why people trust me with anything. Why would I trust myself with this? Go on.
No, yeah. I mean, I totally get that. And I guess I'm just used to it because I grew up this way. So I know what to expect, you know, in terms of like that. And in cities, I'm used to being like not surrounded by people, that when I'm surrounded by people, I feel like I just pick up all their thoughts and fears, and that energy just kind of like it suffocates me and overwhelms me. Mm-hmm. And so there's different things, right? Like, I feel like whether you grew up in the city or the country or wherever you feel more comfortable, it's more just what you're used to and what you feel like you can navigate kind of. So yeah, it comes easy for me.
That's interesting that you're like, oh, the isolation. And now you're like, ah, the isolation.
Yeah. Well, I know it. When the pandemic happened, it made me realize how much I need people. But, you know, a hermit needs to be called out of her hermit hole in order to share her wisdom. And so a part of, I think I need to be out in a part of the world as much as I need to be away from it. And so, again, balance between the extremes is always the key.
That's funny you say that. The two cards that I always keep on my altar and that I'm doing some art around are the hermit and the star, because I feel like they're very,
oh, I love funny. Those.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that you drew that, like, that pair of extremes, because I feel that in myself as well, that it's like, I need the hermitude, and then it's like, and now I've come to shine. Whoop, there I went. Okay, and we're hermiting again.
And we're back. Yeah. Yeah, my rewards for being, for going out into the world and doing things and sharing things, my reward is always just be able to go back into my little hermitage and not see anyone and be in my own space again. Definitely need both. Yeah, it's interesting.
And that's especially like in regards to creation, I feel that I am probably more similar to you in that way, where I find it interesting when, you know, I've talked to artists who are like, I love being around other artists and around community in that way. And that's like what inspires them. And then there's artists that are like, I need to kind of like actually go to a quiet place energetically and physically and tune into myself. And that's what inspires them. And I'm like, that's so interesting, because everyone talks about, oh, well, how do you be creative? And I'm like, I don't think that there's like a one ring to rule them all there.
Definitely not. And I think, you know, there's also extroverts and introverts. Like, I'm very introverted, and a lot of my inspiration comes from like my inner life and stuff like that. Whereas I think maybe people that are more extroverted get inspired by their community, their friends and that sort of collaboration, things like that, where that's kind of harder for me. But yeah, I know it's interesting when you realize that people create for every person that creates for a different reason that's unique to them, which is why you can't try to force yourself to create in a way that works for someone else, because that doesn't mean that that's what works for you and what you're meant to give, you know?
Right. Like, I was thinking of, you know, even in the journey of this podcast, like talking to people about their creative process, but also like all the other things that inform that. Cause that was the original conceit, was I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm a musician and I'm also a therapist. And it's like, so I'm in these two worlds. I'm curious if there are people who are in multiple worlds and how that kind of like informs their sense of self. And what I discovered was like, everyone's in multiple worlds. So it was a really short-sighted thing that I was like, I wonder if people do more than one thing. Yes, Pam, they do. And just that there's no like one formula for it. And I love the way you phrase that it's like, everybody has their own process, but everyone also has their own impetus to do it. Like there's no one thing. I heard something fascinating recently. One of my friends said, you know, they were like, try and see what it is that you can't walk away from. Because if you can walk away from something, it probably isn't that important to you. And you should dedicate your energy to the things that you feel like you absolutely like can't walk away from. I was like, what an interesting litmus test.
It's true. It's very true. And it'll reveal a lot about one's intentions or one's true passion.
Yeah. Like, because even when you said like there are things that you had to deprioritize, like I was like, oh, I was curious, like what did you have to let go of in order to do that? Because that is like a purposeful choice to be like, all right, Baba Yaga in the woods, let's go.
Yeah. Well, I think I tried to, when I was living in the cities, like I lived in LA for a while in Seattle, and I really tried to go out and be like more extroverted and like go to parties and meet people and like do things and like go to shows. And, but it was really unfulfilling for me. And I felt extremely awkward and uncomfortable just going out, because I'm not like a social person in that way. I feel like I'm actively antisocial. Like I resist socializing, which is, you know, fine. It takes all kinds, but I felt like that's what I needed to do in order for like people to know who I was or to make friends or connections. Like networking is like a huge deal in the cities, and a lot of people get a lot of connections by just going out and, you know, doing coke at weird parties at 3 a.m. in like New York or whatever. But like, I just can't do that because that's just not who I am. And so I guess when I moved to the country, I just made a choice in some ways to be like, okay, I'm not going to try to push myself to immerse myself in like a social world that I don't feel like I belong to and that doesn't give me anything. And it actively exhausts me. Right. And I, but I feel like I had to basically trade, you know, maybe a bit of exposure, opportunities. I've lost a lot of opportunities because I wasn't in LA or New York when I got offers to do things. Mm-hmm. I had offers to lay down vocals for movie scores and things like that, but they wanted me like in LA or in New York, and I just wasn't there. So, but I really had to prioritize what I needed for myself, for my mental health, for my spiritual health, and to have a more sustainable career for myself.
Right.
And that meant letting go of like this whole other aspect of being a musician or like a culture actor, that like just didn't feel like it was working for me anyway.
Since we're not on camera, you can't see that I was just nodding vigorously. So I'm putting it in little like bracket text, like not vigorously.
Yeah. It can be hard. It can be hard when you feel like, okay, well, this is what you're supposed to do. Like, this is what everyone else is doing. Or like people say, this will really help your career if you do this or go to this party or meet with these people. And it's just, it doesn't bring anything good out of me. So I'm just like, eh. You know what? I can have an amazing career just following my own gut and trusting in the creative process and trusting that what I make will speak for itself and that I don't need to like enmesh myself into society in order for that to happen.
Yes. And then it's your path essentially. Like, yes, yeah, you could do all those things, but would that be your path? It sounds like you just let go of stuff that like wasn't yours.
Totally. And I think that's why I just feel so much better than I did when I was doing that. And I felt like I wasn't able to be authentic because I was always feeling like I was performing. I always feel like I'm performing in social situations. Like it's exhausting because I just don't, you know, I don't know, introversion again, social anxiety. But yeah.
Feel you on this neurodivergent introverts. I'm like, yes, hi, hello. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but it's great. It's great to be in a space where I feel like I can be liberated from all the things that I thought I had to be and to be able to just like embrace who I actually am and to be able to offer that authentically to the world without feeling like I need to be anything else. It's cool.
I love that. I was like, yes, more of that. And I like how you said it's the future and it's the past. I was just like, yes. Like I feel like, especially when you said like the hegemonic kind of cultural aspects of being in a place, like, I don't know if you felt this way when you were in LA or in Seattle, but it's like, I feel like they're almost like micro movements of music. And I've never really been like in one of them. I've observed a lot of them. And I feel like in some ways I get a free pass because I didn't come here like to be something. I just was born here. And so in some ways I don't have some of the drive of people who have come here or like the motivation for being in LA for that reason. It's more like, it's where it happened. I did choose to come back after college because like I do actively like the city and I wanted to like explore what it meant to be here as like not a child, essentially, like to be like, oh, what would it be like if I was here on purpose? But I've had it easy because like I knew everything here and I knew people here and my family's here and all this stuff. So there's all these things I never had to prove, but like, it's interesting seeing like these little bubbles of almost like there'll be like five bands that like all sound the same, that are all playing the same venues that like everyone goes to, but for like 6 months to a year, and then like another group like of like the same sounding people that are like looking the same and sounding the same. And it's not that they sound bad, but it's just like these weird little bubbles of sameness. And it's like it'd be really hard to tune into like what your thing is if you don't fit into one of those bubbles.
Yeah, especially when like trend setting mostly happens in like New York and LA and stuff, but like trends are a collective thing. And so it's something that like becomes a connector between like a community of people. And so, yeah, these micro movements, it's like everyone's sort of dressing the same, everyone sort of like has the same ideology, and, you know, and then it ends up everything feels really limited then. Like, living in northern, north central Wisconsin is like the most just culturally bankrupt place I could live. I'm sorry. Sorry. I'm so sorry to Wisconsin. I hope you live. So sorry. I'm so sorry to say that, but it is true. Like, you know, but that's what I like about it. It's not pretentious. It's not trying. It's not, you know, and I love self-expression and all that, but like when things feel like there's an aspect of trendiness that like makes me really uncomfortable because it doesn't feel authentic. Like it feels like, oh yeah, then the next micro movement comes and then those people change costumes into something else. And I'm just kind of like, I just don't feel comfortable around that sort of like constantly shifting environment of identity, because my identity is something that like I build over a long period of time of like self-analysis and just, I come to conclusions about things. But this seems to be constantly changing in a way where I'm like, what's going on? Like, what's real? Like, I don't know what the, is this, I don't know. It can be kind of like as sort of like, it's very Hollywood, you know, it's like, there's a darkness to LA that I saw when I lived there that made me feel like I didn't feel comfortable necessarily always in certain environments.
It's very much a city built on mythologies, and I didn't realize that until I went elsewhere. That I came from a place that's just built on storytelling, and I was like, "Wow, that's not what everywhere is." Oh my!
Yeah,
I was like,
and you've got to have this like, and because the city is so big and there's so much potential, like, oh, any day now, you know, any of these cool people could get plucked from obscurity and like they can be the next big thing or whatever. In LA, you have a chance of doing that. In Wisconsin, no one's going to pluck me from nowhere. Like there's no plucking happening. No worries here. But it just makes people, I think, feel like they need to perform and self-mythologize that much more, because they're like almost like playing the part of what they want. It's so much more aspirational in that way. Yeah. That it just can get kind of like I don't know, disingenuous, I guess, a little bit.
The art of arting is what like came to mind, but I'm like, I don't know if that's very articulate at all. Yeah. It's like there's the art of living your life for sure, but then there's the art of channeling that into creating something that then you can share with other people. And of course you can do that in like your everyday presentation, but it's like, why would you do that if you could channel it into something else? If you could be like, no, I'm going to channel this into a body of songs. I'm going to channel this into a book of poetry. I'm going to channel it into something. And not that you then have to live unartfully otherwise, but it's like, if you choose to, you can choose to be like, okay, I don't have to present, like, I don't have to perform personhood in this way that drains my energy from the thing I'm trying to make.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I know that I'm cool. I'm cool. I'm very cool. Like I think I'm very cool. And I think that I'm, you know, but I don't care if anybody else thinks I'm cool, and I don't need to work extra hard to be like, oh, you think I'm cool, don't you? You know? And I just, right. There was so much of that feeling of pressure being put on me when I'm in cities where it's like, oh, like I don't look cool enough, or like, there's this feeling of like not just being able to accept people for who they are. Like there's always got to be like this glitter and glamour around it. And, but yeah, I put that all into my art, like, and whatever. And whatever, I guess, do your best and forget the rest.
it's a powerful place to put that. Like I was thinking about how in our current state of being, I do my very favorite thing, which is go to one of the fanciest coffee shops in West Hollywood looking like trash, because people are very curious about the person who has shown up to the coffee shop looking like a goblin. It is so much fun. It is a delight. Also, they have really good coffee. But it's like, so I like,
is it squirrel?
Oh my God. Squirrel cracks. Did you read about all the like squirrel controversy?
No. Oh my God. There's always controversy. I love, there's always controversy on that Fairfax strip.
Oh my God. Read about like the squirrel jam. I'm like squirrel. I was like, it's like Watergate, but for Squirrel Jam.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
God bless God bless you, West Hollywood. I used to live right off Fairfax, like that, right over there. So that was like that was my hunting ground.
And I love the neighborhood for the sheer absurdity factor, though. I think that's one thing that's kept me here for so long, aside from the familiarity. But just like, because I walk to Alfred's on Melrose Place, mm-hmm. where people are just rocking their like Gucci slides and like all this stuff. And my very favorite thing is to wear this old man sweater that I got from Goodwill, I think for $2 or $3, that I wear as a dress because I'm barely 5 feet tall.
As one does. I'm with you, girl. I'm 5 feet as well.
Yes. Yes. Like, I feel like we are like the tiny goblin crew. This is fantastic.
I mean, everything is a dress if you put it on a 5 foot tall.
Oh, goblin. Yeah. Oh yeah. I was like, everything's a dress if you try hard enough when you're 5 feet tall. Yes. I'm glad that you have adopted this vibe as well. Cause people are like, what are you wearing? And I'm like, unsure, but very.
Yeah. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Like rolling up wearing that and just like, if it's cold, I'll put on tights and maybe like a pair of like, you know, my vegan Birkenstocks, or like, I'll just wear the most ridiculous things just because it's funny, because everyone will go to this coffee shop wearing like clothes that are worth God knows how much so that they can be seen there doing that. And I just think it's the funniest thing. And then everybody ends up looking at me, which I think is funny because then in a way it is a performance. It's like, I'm performing, not caring, but actually I'm relishing it because I think it's funny.
Like, but you know what? Like you wearing that is so much cooler than them wearing their Gucci slides that, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, and then it turns the tables and it automatically, it's like you become a mirror for their own like insecurities, because your confidence in like, you know, wearing, looking like a whatever, you know, like looking like that, like,
yes,
it just reminds them of their own like utter like insecurity. And so it's like, it's actively provocative,
yes,
and antagonistic, which I, you know, I highly, highly respect that move. And it's something that I try to do too.
Yes, I was just like, I look not even artfully messy, just literally.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
this isn't, I made a messy bun and it took me 30 minutes to get like the strands to fall out, like exactly.
It's, yeah,
like, oh no. Oh my god, that's so funny.
Respect.
It's like, oh man, we lived in walking distance from each other. My mom actually went to Fairfax High, so like that's why. Like,
aww,
yeah. It's like, that's why.
Yeah, I used to live right around there. I would haunt that block.
Yes.
And, oh, yeah.
The Cantor is so black, good. And my cookies is the taste.
The Cantor is black. Good. Yeah, I used to spend so much time at CineFamily before it also got canceled.
Oh,
so good.
Before we knew it was so bad.
I know, it's just, you know, the problematic nature of Hollywood in general.
I feel like, yeah, that does encapsulate just about everything here of, wow, it was so good before we knew it was so bad.
Yeah.
Vocal sound trombones. Oh god. And yeah, even like I was thinking about what you said about like finding your own voice when everything else quiets down, and it looped back to what I was thinking when I was actually watching the video and listening to the music, and I was like, bookmark in brain, Pam, ask about production work, and I'm like, yes, now's the time. Like when you're working, are you doing like do you have like a home studio? I was like, how do all the sounds boop?
Yeah. I have a home studio. And that's where I wrote all the songs. And so you most like 90% of the time I'll be in my studio and I'll produce a demo, and then like vocals, beat, everything. Mm-hmm. And with varying levels of finishedness. And then I'll either take that to someone and be like, can we just make this sound a little bit better? Can you just kind of mix my sounds? Or I'll be like, can we just replace everything? but like this is generally like where I was going with it, you know?
Right.
So I really like I produce like definitely. And that's why it's sometimes weird to think about just kind of coming across on the album as a singer, because so much of the work that I do, even if it doesn't make it to the end of the song, like, or to the final version, there's so much production involved that I do on just by myself, that that's just how I'm able to write songs, because I'll mess around in Ableton, I'll come up with some weird loop or something, and then I'll get inspired and go from there. So production is like, yeah, definitely a huge part. But on my upcoming album Archon, I didn't end up keeping as much of my stuff as I think previous records, because Randall Dunn and I got together and we just made stuff that was so much better. So yeah, that's that.
I love
the studio.
I feel like there was like jazz hands at the end, and like that's the
same. Yeah.
I feel like people perceive, and that's why I do make a point to ask about production, I feel like people perceive particularly female or non-binary artists as not being producers, and so I always ask about it, because I don't know if you had this experience, but like I didn't hear a lot of people that were like me talking about music production when I was younger, and so even when I did it, I didn't realize that's what I was doing.
Yeah definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're just too stupid to know how to produce music, and you know, of course, we got to let the men do it.
We need to.
It's just too hard for us. It's too much work. Like, what? I've got to put things into a grid. Programming isn't that for boys?
Oh my god. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And especially like during this time when people have been able to have so much more agency over their own production work because it's so much more available. I'm just like, oh my God, why don't more people talk about this? And even like you said, that it's like, because I'm very similar where it's like sometimes something that I've created sonically might not end up on the final product, but that doesn't mean that you didn't create the blueprint for it. And that didn't, you know, you create kind of like the vibe and the mood of the song. And so sometimes that one sound you made might lead to then a sound that you're collaborating with another producer on, but that didn't mean that you didn't generate the sound.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's just, at the end of the day, my work is better when I collaborate with people. But like my ego would prefer me to do everything myself. So then I could tell everybody, oh, no one touched a damn thing on this album, but it's kind of like, okay, I've like really held on tight to my like authority in terms of like being able to say that I did it all. And it's like, good for me. I, you know, you did it. Good. But it doesn't really mean anything if the song sucks, you know. It's just like, cool, you did that. Well, it's mediocre, but you know, you did do it all. So good for you. So I'm learning to just like let go of that and be like, yeah, I'm just the singer. Sure. I'm just a singer. I'm just here to look cute. Are you kidding me? Are you me? I've got to be here for a better reason. It's not just here. I'm not just here to look cute.
I feel like at least in my case, I'm like, if that was my mission, I may have failed.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, this isn't, they could have gotten someone much better for the job, but okay.
Like that's like my whole like life performing femininity, where it's like that people sometimes arbitrarily decide that I'm attractive, and I'm like, how funny.
Yeah it's like, okay. Like caught me in a good light, caught me in a good angle. We can keep this up. No,
oh,
we can't.
God. No, we can't. It was there, it went. Oh, and that ego of, I like that you said that, because in my mind, what popped in was like the phrase, the Grimes dichotomy of like, you want to do everything yourself, to say you did everything yourself, but at the same time, collaboration is really powerful. And so it's hard because you want to be like, yes, I am competent to do all these things. I understand how to do all these things. But I feel similarly to you, where it's like, I've learned more about how to mix, but honestly, my songs sound better when other people mix them, because I have like a trusted friend that I work with, because he hears things in my songs that I'm not hearing, and he brings up things that I wouldn't hear, and it makes my songs better. So like ultimately, no, I want better songs.
Oh, definitely. And it's like, at the end of the day, you know, when, if you have a clear vision, artistic vision, and you do have a strong sense of authority in what you're doing and able to lead people or guide them to, you know, with collaboration and stuff, like, you can have a very collaborative record, but still feel like it's your vision at the end of the day. And I don't think we need to be patting ourselves on the back saying, oh, I did it all myself. I did it all myself. It's like, cool. Like, okay. But at the end of the day, are you making something that will withstand the test of time because you brought in experts in their own fields? Like, I think about the Kendrick Lamar record, the new one, incredible. Such a work of art. And you can tell there are people all over that record, that there was a community that built that record, and that record will live for lifetimes. Like, I swear to God, his music is so good because of the way that he collaborates with people, but it's so still uniquely him. And that's what I think if you're a true auteur or a true visionary, you know how to communicate your vision so well that you'll get something better than you ever thought of, but that comes from the way that you guided the project. You know, it's like Kanye, like earlier Kanye stuff, like his curation of collaborators was sometimes as important and vital to his work as, you know, his own ideas. And sometimes that's really what shows a great visionary artist.
Yes. Yes, I wholeheartedly agree, because there's the image of, like, not like the lone wolf, but like, yeah, the like, I, oh, Pam brain. My brain was just like the Ayn Rand. I did this all myself.
I mean, that is very Ayn Rand. it's very Randian, though. It's very libertarian. It's a very libertarian mindset. Like, you know, the golden god who, you know, can fix the world and do it all on his own. He's got everything on his back, you know, like,
yes.
It's lonely and it's inaccurate. And it's not like, it's humanity is a collective experience. And so to isolate yourself to the point where you're not participating in the collective by collaborating, I think that is a shame to just like the growth of the collective, you know? And yes, it takes individuality to really push culture and the collective forward, but you have to bring other people in order to really disseminate that power, you know? Otherwise, you're just kind of burning yourself out.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of back to like the hermit and the star, where it's like, you do have to kind of like retreat to that quiet place to be like, okay, what's in here? But then you do have to come back out and shine with other people. Otherwise, like, what's the point of being like, cool, I discovered this.
Yeah. And I think too, like, the capitalist reins on the music industry have really, there's so many reasons why, you know, we're really into like the soul artist, soul genius kind of paradigm. It's economical, you know, soul artists are easier to control, and there's just so many reasons like that. And so like the power of the multiple, the power of like the collective is it's a threat to, I think, capitalism. And that's why capital wants to pit us against each other instead of working together. We want to like battle each other for this one spot, and that's all a lie. Like, that's just an illusion built by our like contemporary framework.
Yes, especially people who, you know, probably actually would collaborate together and would collectivize, like how it's like, oh, there can only be like the one female artist, or oh, this is the spot for the LGBTQ plus artist, and it's like the one of those, as opposed to be like, I don't what
like I remember when I started making, like when Conatus came out around 2011, there were people that were like pitting me up against other musicians or like my peers at the time, and they were like tallying votes about who was like the better one based on their own weird subjective criteria. And I'm just like, really? So like, you're actually like celebrity death matching two like young women who are just both passionate about music and trying to like live their dreams, but you're deciding that only one of them can like win. Like, yeah. it's such like a demented mindset to enter into. And we can't be entertaining that anymore, because it's really damaging to culture and to people.
I agree.
Everybody.
Like, it separates us. It's funny that you say that, because I remember there was a review actually of My Best Friend that I was telling you about earlier. Like, her music was compared to yours in an article like ages ago, simply because you both have long, dark hair.
Yeah, they love to do that shit.
And I'm just like, I don't know if you've heard her stuff. Her band's Nostalgia. And like, you were both performing around LA at the same time. And there was like, I remember reading a review of her show that it was like, oh, much like Lola Jesus, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, they don't actually sound anything alike. You're both amazing. You just happen to not sound alike.
Yeah. And it's so like, annoying because it always. What? I hate that shit, because then it also creates a lot of animosity between, you know, a lot of really strong, amazing women, because they feel like they've been forced into this like arena, this cage match with this other artist that they don't even know. And you're just like, cool. So you're what? You're expecting me to have to compete with this person? These comparisons, like, it's all just, it's really damaging.
It really is. Like, even forging that friendship, like, she and I talked about that, you know, being in LA and being artists, it's hard to form those friendships because you're pitted against each other. Like, we were talking about how no one, it was actually funny that no one pitted us against each other, because she's like, oh, it's because you look different than I do. Like, we're both female, but you look different.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the ones that she was like pitted against were like you and like Chelsea Wolfe, because they look like her. Mm-hmm. And then like she and I were talking about how bizarre that is, that it's like she and I, you know, had to kind of really get to know each other and develop that trust, because we were like, we're in a situation where people are trying to actually stop people like us from being friends, and that is deranged.
Mm-hmm. it is, and it's true. It's like they want us to be competitive, they you know, and it's like it's a real shame, because you know, we're all of the women making music right now, they love music. So they all probably grew up loving music, passionate about it. And maybe they make dark music, which means they probably have something else in common, which is like a deep propensity for melancholy. Like, how awesome is it that there are these women that exist that are melancholic and musical, but we can't come together and be like, oh, you're sad, I'm sad too. Oh, you like music, I like music too. Let's be friends. We have to be like, she will die. Like, I will conquer them all. Like, there can only be one sad girl making music, and it's going to be me.
I'm just like the saddest.
Yeah. But then it sucks too, because I'm like, I want to be like going up to these girls and be like, do you want to be my friend? And they're like, I'm supposed to hate you or whatever. Right. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, okay. Yes, it's so weird. It's so weird.
That's what she and I were talking about, because we became friends in like, oh gosh, I think that was either 2012 or 13 or 11. It was somewhere around there that like I opened for her, and we became really good friends because of that. But like, even upon like first meeting each other, I remember I said to her, I was just like, she is rather tall and I'm rather small. So the first thing I actually said to my best friend was, wow, you're like a tree. Cause like, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like a graceful tree come to life. And she was like, you're a pixie. It was really funny. I was just like, oh my God, this person's so wonderful. But I remember feeling that moment of like, wait, are we allowed to like each other? Cause yeah, it was like, we're supposed to not be friends. And then like, we have this hypothesis that it's like, they keep us away from each other, because if we actually all were friends, like we would overpower them, because we're all very powerful.
Totally. No, I think that's a huge part of it. And I think it's also misogyny, where, you know, I feel like the overarching patriarchal systems don't want women to collectivize, because that's just dangerous. So it's easier to kind of pit them against each other in really like primal like ways than actually like fostering any sort of connection. Yeah. And so you know, that's tired. Tired of that too. Over it. Ready to move on to something different.
I just realized, I was like, wait, we all have like basically are like witch kibbutzes in the woods.
Exactly, right? I mean, that's the future and the past.
Oh my God. I love it. I love it. I just made tiny plotting hands. I was like, I think we're onto something.
Yeah,
definitely. I was like, I want to know what comes next. I want to know how we kind of collectivize more, because I want a future and a present that's different than what we've both experienced, which sounds like being ostracized from our peers that like we actually wanted to be friends with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to have to take rejecting capital as the main source of reward. And by doing that, you also have to like reject the narratives that like the industry is forcing down your throat, like all hours of the day. Because nothing can thrive within the vacuum of like the oppressive environment that we're in. That's actively doing this by pushing us all apart and telling us to like, you know, fight to our death or whatever. But, you know, that also takes a huge leap of faith, because then you're turning your back on the one thing that has structure to it. And having to face something very structureless and face the unknown is like super scary. But I think the more people we get on board, we got to start petitioning for a kibbutz in the woods and get this moving, because it's just going to take a lot of people just going like, I'm over this all at once. And collectivizing really is really, and it's not what they want from us. So it's going to be hard.
I was like, okay, well, you have this Jewish gremlin on board.
Perfect. Like, perfect.
I was like, okay, so if you sit on my shoulders, we'll be as tall as my best friend Cassandra, and she's gonna join too.
Perfect. I have a tall friend too, and it's so funny, like DJing with her or like hanging out with her, because she's like 6 feet tall and I'm 5 feet tall, and she wears like these massive heels and I don't wear any heels, and I just feel like I'm her daughter. I'm just like, God damn, I can't, I don't feel like a woman next to you. I feel like a small child.
Oh my God. Same with me. And by the way, tall women who wear heels are like literally my heroes. Like I love, my best friend does wear like, even at home, she loves wearing these like high heeled, like mules. Like it's, she's very glam. And I love that. She, as she put it, she's like, I think everyone walks in my house and knows that I'm Persian. And I was just like, well, yes. And that's a good thing. Like her lounging shoes are like 4-inch heels. I was like,
I love it
so much. And so, yeah, when we go out together, like we went to get, she wanted to take me to get a manicure, 'cause she always has like well manicured nails, and I'm me. And so like, it was the funniest thing. We took a photo and it literally looks like a child's hand, like next to like her mom's hand.
It's a hustle.
Oh my God. I love it. I love it so much. Like she's the one that's always just like showing me like different makeup things. Like she'll literally put makeup on me and take photos. And I love it so much, but I do feel,
oh, like, you're like her little American girl doll.
Yes. I'm like glamour magic that just like bypassed me entirely. So I'm just like, do it, do everything, whatever you want. I'm here.
I love it.
Oh my God.
Man.
I was like, let's build this future, because that, I've been thinking about this a lot while talking to people and, you know, basically doing this pod, therapizing, musicking, all the things that I'm like, what do we build that comes next? Because we've clearly proven that like what we have does not work. Like that is like kind of incontrovertible, but it's like, I do want to build what's coming next. Like, I was like, that's what happens after the tower falls down. You build something else.
Definitely. And me too. Sign me up.
I was like,
I can't handle this anymore.
What did I say early on in this? I was just like, this is banana pants. And my friends now say that too. And I'm like, I'm so sorry that I've cursed you with the most ridiculous word to describe.
I mean, sometimes there's few words can explain such a horror that we're enduring as banana pants.
I think about how, you know, through the cycles of the eons, people have all thought that they were living through the apocalypse, but I'm like, were they saying it was banana pants? I think not.
Yeah, this is a new level. This is a banana. This is level banana pants.
I just thought of like the terrorism chart, and it's like, no, it's off the chart. It's banana.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, cheers to that. I was like, let's create new things. In the meantime, I'm like, I am so grateful for you dedicating the time to this conversation. It's been fantastic getting to hang out with you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it was very, very chill. Lots of laughs.
Excellent.
Love to laugh. Thank you so much.
Got a good
love to complain. Got some complaints in as well.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you liked what you heard, please head over to your preferred podcast platform and follow our podcast. You can also give us a 5-star rating or drop a glowing review. All of these things help more listeners to discover our podcast, and that means that then they can enjoy the wisdom of our wonderful guests. You can also come hang out with us on social media. We are on Instagram and TikTok under Why Not Both Podcast. Thanks again, and we will see you the next episode. We'll be right back.